Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the April 16th, 2024 edition of Ask a Leader. Returning to the show to speak for the full hour is Samantha Trad, the National Director of Advocacy for Compassion and Choices. Up the escalator are more states enacting laws granting end-of-life options or medical aid in dying, MAID, an acronym we're all going to be using. Amidst the trend, boarding the downward escalator are federal and state challenges to end these choices. So we'll talk all about that. In the background are Compassion and Choices findings that a majority across the political spectrum support MAID, medical aid in dying. More earnest questions about that last act we all have. We'll be right back after a short break with Samantha Trad. Welcome back to the show. For the full hour is my guest, Samantha Trad, National Director of Advocacy for Compassion and Choices, on a day which also happens to be National Healthcare Decisions Day. I wonder who set that up. It should be the National Healthcare Decisions Year and forward. Compassion and Choices very publicly expresses that death is not partisan, and the American public appears to agree. A national survey they commissioned from the bipartisan polling team, we got to name names so people don't think I'm just pulling this out of a hat. The national bipartisan polling team of Goodwin Simon, with support from Susquehanna Research, revealed a striking consensus. A majority across the political spectrum, 67% Republicans, 68% Independents, and 80% of Democrats favor legalizing medical aid in dying. And Samantha will be speaking today in the capacity as Compassion and Choices Action Network about the ongoing efforts to defend patient-centered and patient-directed end-of-life care across California. And we're going to go into all the states, but there's some federal sort of zones we're going to mine here too. She's an expert on implementing medical aid in dying laws and leads education and outreach efforts in California to eliminate barriers for eligible patients who want the option of medical aid in dying under the California Act. Previously, Samantha taught American politics at the University of Redlands and was the executive director of the Arizona Advocacy Network. In a volunteer capacity, she served as campaign manager, consultant, and organizer in local elections in Redlands, California, and Tempe, Arizona. She comes to us live today from the LA area. Welcome back to Ask a Leader, Samantha Trad.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here, especially on National Healthcare Decisions Day.
Yes.
Just a little factoid, you know, Ben Franklin is quoted as saying, the only two certainties in life are death and taxes. And guess what day yesterday was?
Okay, back to back.
That's why.
Oh, that's why.
National Healthcare Decisions Day.
We need insiders just to put the obvious. It's obvious, but it's context that I wouldn't have had. So, and I guess that is the cosmos was trying to nudge you away. We were hoping to have you on a month ago, but this has its own logic. Unless something sad happened to somebody because they didn't have the information that you're going to be giving us today. So, we're going to talk in the general sense, and then we're going to go to state-level developments. So what the options most recently adopted are, they're a reminder of why they're important, and language that we use is so important. It's medical aid in dying, MAID, end of options versus the use of suicide-assisted death. And I want to say that it came into another sort of data point into that was National Public Radio warning that if suicide is triggering somebody when they were talking about a physician's assisted suicide. So that's another confounding thing. It's not a trigger if we don't even bring up the misinforming sort of word of that end of life option. It is not suicide. We're going to talk later about how insurance sorts of formulas are hinging on this kind of language. So we'll get to that. So agency and autonomy policies from conception to death are concerning headwinds. And so I guess I'll open with, are you seeing the sort of the conception, if there are parallels with how people are dealing with autonomy, about dealing with conception and autonomy, dealing with death, Samantha?
Yeah, I think that there's still a lot of challenges, still a lot of people who don't have the end of life that they want. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, we do live in a culture that doesn't accept the inevitability of death. We don't like to talk about it. It's painful. Most of us have grief from a loved one's death. I just saw a commercial actually the other day, and I had to laugh out loud because the commercial basically said, like, we're all going to live forever. It's not going to happen. And it's really important to be prepared and to have those conversations, as uncomfortable as they can be, and to know what your options are, because it actually changes depending on what state you live in. Depending on the trajectory of your end of life, it's actually very similar to giving birth. You know, you can make all the plans you want for how you want your birth to go, but when the time comes, you don't know exactly what's going to happen, and end of life is very similar. And at Compassion and Choices, you know, our mission is to expand options so that people do have a lot of options, and most people don't even realize what options they have. And that also you are able to chart your own end-of-life journey so that you can have the peaceful end-of-life that you want. But none of that will happen if we don't start having those conversations. And you don't have to have any special knowledge, you know, to have these conversations. We try to make it really easy for people to understand. So, and it is a growing movement, you know, as our population gets older and people start realizing, or really people start experiencing loved ones having an end-of-life experience that they may not have wanted, they realize that, you know, you really do have to have those conversations. And sometimes we kind of joke that, you know, talking about death won't kill you. In fact, it'll do the opposite. It'll help you have a better end of life. And so I encourage everybody to go to our website. We have so many resources to try to make it really easy for people to wrap their heads around end of life. I promise you won't jinx yourself, but it will help you to have those conversations, to be prepared. And we're seeing more and more people who are really accepting of the end of life, right? And the full circle of it. Different demographics too.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I'll ask you about that, but there are so many platforms I'm seeing. Death over dinner, death over dress. I think I actually ordered, because of a Compassion and Choices webinar last week, the Death Deck, which is a small little package of prompts that you could bring. I mean, it's meant for brew pubs, but you could take it death over tea or something like that. But these conversations are... unbelievable. And we talked about that in other interviews about the enriching quality. There's nothing morbid. I'm sure if we could measure it, there'd be an endorphin kind of surge when people realize what, you know, if they could gauge what's going on in the body when we're addressing this inevitability. And I had a chance to talk with a radio colleague, and I think it'll be upcoming on his show at a later date, but there's these grief bots that are being introduced by entrepreneurs that are sort of messing with this inevitability of death by making it sound like they're tweaking beings to last on. So that's a little bit of a headwind for cultural acceptance of this inevitability. That is another topic for another day, but these are all swirling in what Compassion and Choices is trying to bring to that moment of exploring, expressing, and expanding one's construct about that chapter we want to make our own. So, and you were saying lots of demographics. So is part of your strategy, Samantha, bringing Black, Latino, all ethnicities and religious identities along these expanded end-of-life options and planning?
Our plan is to make sure that people are able to chart their own end-of-life journey. And yes, we want to make sure that people are empowered to do that. And, you know, there is disparity in our healthcare system. We know there's discrimination. There have been many studies done. And sadly, this persists at the end of life as well. Mm. So we work really hard to try to meet different communities where they're at with an intersectional lens. And we have some really great leadership councils, including, for example, on our Latino Leadership Council, we have Dolores Huerta, who does a lot of outreach work with us. We have an African-American Leadership Council. We have an Asian-American Native Hawaiian Leadership Council, a Catholic Council. You know, we have really wonderful leaders in communities who come together with our organization to try to figure out how do we meet people where they're at, because there is no one cookie cutter fits all for end of life. And, you know, in some cultures, there isn't even a word for death.
Really?
So, yeah.
For example?
They don't talk about it. In a lot of different cultures, really, because it can be really scary. But we want to make sure that we're not being tone deaf, and that we meet people where they're at and talk about it in their language. And then it's the leaders of those communities that are really bringing the message. So, for example, in Hawaii, we did a few years ago, we had a number of small groups with leaders in the Native Hawaiian community who came together to talk about, you know, how do we talk to our community about this? It wasn't something that was talked about very often, if at all. But at the same time, they were witnessing loved ones who were not having a good end-of-life experience, and certainly not the end-of-life that they wanted. So trying to figure out, how do we navigate this? And we actually ended up making, this group made little booklets that were geared towards their own community in a language that they felt resonated with people in their community. And it took a long time to put together, but it was a beautiful community-building tool, actually, where people came together and came closer talking about this very sensitive subject. It can be really powerful in ways you wouldn't imagine when you do talk about death and talk about the type of death that you may want or that your loved one may want.
Well, I'm just wondering if in that culture there's not a word for it, is because there are lots of words about the other side or something like that. I can't imagine it's about denial, but it's about maybe there's so much nuance in how passing is, I'm guessing. So for those of you who've just joined us, my guest for the full program is Samantha Tradd, National Director of Advocacy for Compassion and Choices, talking about the campaign to keep and improve the End of Life Act. So I want to speak again to the sensibilities, because and it sounds like a little not hyper-local, but like regional. But I want to bring that up first and then go to what the states are up to. But as Amantha, during the California state primary, I interviewed 4 California state Senate candidates about the renewal of the End of Life Options Act, largely because I understood from a good source, because Compassion Choices and affiliates watch what legislators are doing. I understood that the state senator for this District 37 was not representing the district when the renewal of the End of Life Options Act was extended, because it keeps sunsetting. It's the next one's going to sunset too in 2031. But I wanted for constituents to hear how ready are candidates, how ready are they to say they respect the autonomy of the individual to make choices for their end of life. It was a tricky exercise, and especially because it was a thorn in my side that we were not represented. And it was the renewal of the End of Life Options Act was pretty close, and it was pretty last at the end of the wire, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's really difficult to pass these laws and to improve them, largely because it is so hard to talk about death. You'd be surprised how many legislators I've actually had cry in meetings talking about, you know, a loved one. But there's also so much going on in the world right now. It can be difficult to make our bills a priority, but we did it in a year, in 2021.
Yeah.
We passed the SB 380, which did improve the End of Life Option Act. But unfortunately, we got a new sunset provision, which what a sunset is when we just pass a temporary law. So before 2031 hits, you know, we're going to lose medical aid in dying in 2031. So we will go back to the legislature at some point to make sure that, you know, all of the changes we made in 2021 are continuing to be safe and effective as all the data has been showing. And that if there's any other improvements needed, you know, we may want to look at that time. But we do have a couple years, so we're not planning on going back in yet, but probably in the next couple years, we will. And I was in Sacramento just a few months ago talking to legislators, keeping them updated. Every year, the California Department of Public Health puts out a report. So we have a utilization report. We know how many people have used the law, what insurance they use, you know, how old they were, what their terminal illness was. And also there are, every once in a while, there's some peer-reviewed studies that are done. And every study shows that this is a safe and trusted law. You know, there's never been an incident of coercion or abuse. The only thing that's happened is that more people have been able to end their life the way they wanted and not the way their terminal illness had them going. So it's been good. It's been a journey, you know, and we can talk more about California, but I didn't know if you wanted to talk a little bit about National Healthcare Decisions Day and just make sure people have what they need. You mentioned the Death Deck, which I love. We actually have partnered with the Death Deck, which is from California, by the way, and has gone national now. There's also a great group in the Orange County, LA region that's also national, but it was started in that area by a wonderful woman named Stephanie Elkins. She has a group called Death Over Draft. What a great way to talk about death, you know, to meet somewhere where you can have a beer or something else and talk about death. And so it's really important that people have these conversations with their loved ones and that you have a clear designated healthcare proxy, because you can't predict the future. You don't know exactly what will happen. Even the most detail-oriented healthcare directive may not cover your circumstance. So it's important that your loved ones know what your values and priorities are at the end of your life. And I would encourage everybody to go on our website. We have a great booklet you can download called our End of Life Decisions Guide, Your End of Life Decisions Guide. And it talks about your values at the end of your life, you know, and the Death Deck kind of works in a similar way where you have different scenarios and you think through, like, what do I care about? And it's interesting to really get down to the nitty gritty of what do you want? At what point are you ready to end your suffering, you know? And it's different for everybody. Everyone has different values and priorities, and you simply don't know what those are until you take time to really sit with it. And you can learn a lot about yourself. And I know for me, doing this work has really helped me to appreciate life so much. It sounds very depressing, but actually it can be a very beautiful thing that can give you a new respect and appreciation for this day we have, you know?
Well, and also, and to be with others that are in a very acknowledged an end of life situation, we can also be better companions to people that are doing that. If we understand, yeah, right? And so it's not just for our chapter, but making somebody else's chapter a pretty fine one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what I noticed about the Death Deck, that was actually, they cracked one open in a sense for a Compassion and Choices webinar last week. And it was interesting is that I think there were two or three people that were responding to it. No, I'm not going to name names because I can't remember them, but you're safe with me, Compassion Choices folks, that it's, there were some answers that surprised other people. So there's a kind of like a cross kind of thought process going on about, I wouldn't have thought of, you know, that's interesting you would say that. Why? And so it's sort of like the Death Deck unpacks the concepts there. So it was really an interesting one. I got that so fast. That one, it's like I had a fulfillment station nearby with the Compassion Choices loot there. So that was pretty funny and fast. So I wanted to, and I will, I mentioned the grief bots to that conversation, because that's a whole conversation about what the grief bots are, sort of a liability in this whole advancement, what we're trying to do here. So let's then Let's go in. There's 11 states currently that have some legislative amendments and challenges and that are going on. I want to first talk about California had a lawsuit challenging the medical aid in dying brought by the United Spinal against the state of California. It was dismissed. But even though a case is dismissed, there are deep pockets that want to keep trying these and keep challenging it. So it's never, you're always having to defend them. And I wanted to, and while we're talking about always defending, the work is in California is all ongoing. When you say you have to renew the end of life options, that there are term limits that mean you have a whole new crop of state senators that need to have this education all over again. That, so there's this constant sort of cultivating and a nurturing of policymakers in California, among other places, to bring them along with codifying these choices for the constituents.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting, though, I do think there's more and more awareness around the law. And so, like you mentioned, 10 states in Washington, D.C. all have medical aid in dying laws. The first state to pass was Oregon.
Yes.
Way back, apparently the 90s was a long time ago, although it doesn't always feel that way. But we've had Oregon's law for over 26 years now.
And it's a template for other states, too. It's been very important for other states to
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, California was the fifth state to pass. We passed in 2016. And right now, there's actually 19 states that have introduced legislation to authorize medical aid in dying. We're really close in a couple of states to passing. So Minnesota, Illinois, and New York are all very, very close to getting their laws passed. I'm very hopeful for those states. If you know anybody who lives in those states, please tell them. If you go to our website, it's really easy to get involved. It's so important to email, if you live in those states, to email your legislators and let them know you want this option. And then in West Virginia, there was actually a really bad measure that their state legislature voted to put on the ballot, a measure that would make it illegal to ever have aid in dying in West Virginia and to put it in their constitution.
That's so on really this one, on 2024?
Correct. Yeah. It's going to be on their November ballot. So, you know, there's a whole range of where different states are at. In California, we have one of the better medical aid in dying laws. All the laws were modeled after Oregon. And the core safeguards for the law, you have to be terminally ill with 6 months or less to live. This means it's for people who are imminently dying. You need to be mentally capable of making medical decisions. So that means it's not for people with advanced dementia. You need to know what you're asking for, and you have to be able to ingest the medication yourself. You also need to be an adult, and unfortunately, in most of the states, you have to be a resident, although you no longer have to be a resident in Oregon or Vermont, and soon, hopefully, New Jersey. New Jersey's working on taking away their residency, too. But yeah, in California, we had a 15-day minimum waiting period that was just terrible, because the thing is people don't ask for this option until they need it. You know, they're at the end of their life, they're suffering. They don't realize how cumbersome it can be to actually access the law. So if you think you may want this option, even if you're not sick, you can talk to your doctor and say, hey, if I were to become sick, if I were eligible for this option, usually it's people with cancer or ALS, would you support me in this? Because you have to have two different doctors who will support you in the option, and it can be very hard to find a doctor. Part of the reason is that Catholic health systems and Adventist health systems, such as Dignity Health or Loma Linda, they don't let people have many end-of-life options, and they certainly don't let their doctors practice medical aid in dying, and they have that jurisdiction. Any doctor can opt out. Any health system can tell their doctors they can't do this work. So it's really important to have those conversations early on so that you're set up to be able to have that option should you need it. If there's any, you know, any doctors who are listening or nurses who are kind of trying to wrap their heads around this, because I do think it's interesting. You know, they don't teach end of life much in medical school. That's changing. We're trying to work on changing that as well. but there's a great end-of-life symposium that the City of Hope puts on every year. This year it's at the end of May in Las Vegas. It'll be fun.
Okay.
But I encourage you to go. If you're interested in this topic, you don't have to be medical staff, but you can get continuing medical education. So if you look up City of Hope End of Life Symposium, I'll be there. I'm talking. I'm on a panel about medical aid in dying. And it's a really great event every year.
Are there going to be virtual means for attending?
Not this year. We have in years past, but this year you have to go in person, unfortunately.
Okay. Because that just sounds really, really productive. And
it's a great conference.
Yes.
And it's really, you know, now we actually have conferences talking about end of life because it's so important. It affects everybody. And there's so much to talk about, you know, and so many options, so much to know about.
I just want to remind listeners, if you just joined us, my guest for the full hour is Samantha Tredd, National Director of Advocacy for Compassion and Choices. We're talking about defending and improving end-of-life options laws, including its medical aid in dying, or MAID. Samantha's steering clear of the acronyms, and I thank you for that. That helps. So when you were talking about, the early conversations are so important so we can become familiar with any healthcare delivery location of service, we can see the fine print that may prevent medical aid and dying options being exercised. That's another reason to be prepared. So you don't end up being in a kind of a cul-de-sac of healthcare delivery decisions. You can't move.
Right. And you got to be really clear with your doctor. I've heard so many people who just had heartbreaking stories where their doctor said, oh, yeah, I will support you, whatever you want. And then when it comes time to actually write the prescription, they say, oh, well, I don't do that. And the person has to start all over again. You know, this is not what you want to be doing with your final days on earth. You know, you don't want to be spending it trying to find a way to peacefully end your suffering. As much as you can, get it lined up ahead of time. Do it. And luckily, it usually doesn't take quite as long to access anymore because of the bill we passed in 2021, thanks to Senator Eggman.
Yes.
There's now a 48-hour waiting period between the first two oral requests. There's a whole bunch of steps you got to go through. I don't want anybody to be nervous about it. But again, if you go to our website, compassionandchoices.org, go to the California page. We have a little booklet that guides you through it. It's almost like a passport, but you have to make multiple requests. You have to have a written request, but it has all of that lined out so you can make sure you follow the steps you need to be able to access the law.
So I want to talk about other states' progress and some of the features, but you've got me a little creeped out that there is a state that would like to make it constitutionally that would forbid those choices.
Yep.
And that, I'm just... And there's other consequences, too, on its ballot construction. Is this kind of a way to bring other voters, you know, and energize voters that will have other kinds of behavior on the ballot? So that's very concerning. And there's so many details I want to sort of wrap up a bit. The City of Hope Symposium in Las Vegas, what's the date for that, Samantha?
It's May 28th through the 30th.
Okay. So when you were talking about other parts of the, let's say in Minnesota, for example, the measure that was voted on was, it was just in a recent measure, it would not permit insurance coverage to be affected by what options a person is signaling they want to exercise. So can you break that down so people understand why language is important when we talk about medical aid in dying and the complications that can reverberate if the medical insurance adjusters, the life insurance adjusters want to capitalize on that for them and not for the patient.
Yeah. Yeah. And we very carefully craft our bills to make sure they're as safe as possible. So what Minnesota was trying to double down on and what we have in California is that insurance companies are not allowed to deny any life-saving treatment in order to try to encourage someone to take medical aid in dying. You know, unfortunately, the opposition kind of peddled this falsehood that a doctor or a health system might try to coerce someone into taking aid in dying instead of offering them life-saving treatment. That is illegal. That is absolutely not allowed to happen. And also, again, this is why it's really important the person has that agency to advocate for themselves. Although, again, it's you know, they can't do that. Most health insurance covers aid in dying. You know, actually, the harder part is paying for the medication because it can get expensive.
How? A range.
Right now, I've heard it's between $600 and $800. In the past, the medication itself has been up to $2,000. But generally, right now, it's $600 to $800. And it can't, you know, not all insurance covers it. Medi-Cal actually does cover it, which is great. But Medicare does not, because when Oregon passed their law, Congress got scared and passed an act that restricts federal funding from medical aid in dying. And so because Medicare is all federal money, it won't cover aid in dying. This is also true for veterans benefits. So if you go to VA, you can't access the option there because it's federal money that would pay for it. So that's something we're working on too in Congress. We have a great federal national team that's up in Congress, talking to Congress members, trying to help them understand why we need to reverse this act and make sure that Medicare can cover this safe, compassionate option that the majority of Americans, majority of every demographic wants. So we're working on that as well.
So, you know, that makes me think, Samantha, there's the Hyde Amendment for the beginning of life funding, right? The Hyde Amendment is a restriction, and then we have something, it's very symmetrical, is at the end of life. And how ironic that Medicare would trim options for seniors.
Well, and it's just really not fair that only people with wealth and privilege should be able to access this option. You know, it really should be an option for everyone who wants it. And what's really interesting, you know, we have a bunch of data from all of these states, and we found that about 25 to 30% of everybody who goes through the whole process gets their medication. They never even take their medication.
Correct.
Because these people don't want to die, but they're going to die. They are terminally suffering. Their life is ending, and they don't want to suffer. And having the medication can give them a huge sense of relief to know they have this option so that they have a little bit of control over something they otherwise don't have any control over. And it can be such a beautiful thing. And I do think how you die, it, you know, it reverberates through your family and your community. And to be able to say goodbye to your loved ones and have a peaceful end of life is such a beautiful gift that some people want. You know, it's not for everybody. I know Catholics believe in redemptive suffering, and that's fine. If that's what you want for your end of life, that's great. That should be your end of life option, right? But if that's not what you want, then people need to be able to access the other end of life options that are available.
So that is a demographic, a religious kind of dogma that is looming over all of the state measures that are under consideration. So I wanted to bring up the progress that Washington made, what the state of Washington, they reduced the waiting period. That was with Republican support. And all of these measures are getting, there are Republican legislators in these states that are the sponsors for that. So Montana had dispensed with the Physician Imprisonment Act. That was one of the Compassion Choices items that you were working on, and you managed to block it, but it could come back again, right?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of funny. The majority of Republicans support medical aid in dying, majority of libertarians. In fact, the California State Libertarian Party they endorsed our bill before the Democratic Party did. It's truly a nonpartisan issue. It's something everybody wants. The majority of Catholics want, they want the option of medical aid in dying. What I'm finding, though, is some Republicans are afraid to publicly support these bills. They're really afraid of, you know, their Catholic donors no longer donating to them or funding a more extreme opposition. And it's really such a shame, because I think as we do see more and more Republicans publicly endorsing and supporting medical aid in dying, they're going to get a lot of support, because this is what people want. I mean, we've done so much polling, so much research, and other groups have too. The California Healthcare Foundation did a great survey about end of life a couple years ago. And again, they found majority of Latinos, majority of African-Americans, people want end of life options. They don't want to be stuck. You know, people want control over their end of life experience, and having those options is really important. And again, the whole reason we have these laws is to make sure they're safe and trusted No one has ever been coerced. No doctors even lost their license before, because it's a very time-tested process to make sure that, you know, again, you have to be terminally ill at the end of your life to be able to access this option.
Then in Vermont was a recently improved reduced waiting period as well, plus enabling telemedicine and also allowing, because you already alluded to states that have adopted measures that allow for out-of-state residents to exercise mm-hmm. options as non-residents. So how about enabling telemedicine? How is that getting codified around the country? How far can you, I think that's allowing for the second physician that has to sign off on that option being exercised. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. You know, it kind of depends on the state you live in, the health system you go to, the doctor you see. Overall, if you've already, it's very similar, as it should be, to everything else in healthcare, right? It's up to your doctor. Even today, my son has a doctor's appointment. I was hoping it would be telehealth, but the doctor said, nah, I think I need to see him in person, right? So, but it's really nice to have that option. You know, that was one of the few silver linings from when COVID really hit and everybody was in lockdown, is that telehealth became more available. And states like Hawaii has really fabulous telehealth to make sure that everyone can access the care that they need. And you got to remember, the people who are going through the process to access medical aid and dying, they are imminently dying. And so to physically go to multiple doctor appointments is incredibly challenging. And so when it is possible and, you know, the prescribing doctor or nurse practitioner feels comfortable doing telehealth, it's really great when that's a possibility. And in California, it is legal to use telehealth. But I do believe you have to have already established a patient-doctor relationship with the person. And so, and again, you have to have three different doctor appointments. So if just one of them can be over telehealth, it makes it a lot easier.
And so Medicare, even if it doesn't support the end-of-life options, there still is, I remember this came up from the Affordable Care Act, correct? That there is, you can have with your primary care doc, there's a billable line item for having your wishes be discussed with them, which is, it's an essential first step to have. There are things that shake out of that conversation that get you moving along to exercising some agency in greater depth and range in the future.
Yeah. One of the best things Medicare covers, actually, is hospice. And we're big fans of hospice. You know, finding the right hospice for you is really important. You should interview hospices. But Medicare pays for hospice when you have 6 months or less to live. And it's a beautiful in-home service. Sometimes there are hospices you can physically go to, but generally the hospice comes to you. And it's so helpful for people in their final stages to have that care and support. But again, not every hospice is the same, and we really encourage people to interview hospices, you know, ask them what their values are. Ask them if they allow, you know, if they allow you to take medical aid in dying, because sadly, there's still some hospices who they won't let their staff be in the room when the person takes their medication, which is such a weird stigma that's completely unnecessary. But then there's other hospices that are very supportive. And if that's the option the person qualifies for, you know, they'll support the person all the way till the end. And Medicare covers it. It's really a great benefit.
So we're still talking about different state case studies. In the New York legislature, that's what's trending on the Compassionate Choices social media right now.
So
the A99A or S2445, for those from all over the Empire State that are listening over to this little community platform, is that the Bar Association, they've been on board. The Medical Society is now an ally to the legislation. So it's that was a big deal, because medical societies are sometimes very kind. I mean it very sort of a reactionary. They're kind of slow in advancing sort of newer approaches to things. But with the Medical Society as an ally in New York's adopting an end-of-life option measure, does that contribute to momentum with other allies that hadn't been a part of adopting their measures?
It's huge. It's a really big deal. Number of state medical societies have changed their position from opposition to neutral. Some even have gone so far as to actually support our bills across the country. And I can tell you in California, it wasn't until the California Medical Society changed their position from opposition to neutral that our bill flew through the legislature. You know, every state's different, but in a lot of states, the medical society can carry a lot of weight. And to have them change their position is great. Our state director there, Corinne Carey, is an amazing campaign leader. She's really doing a great job with her team in New York. If you live there, this is the moment. You know, get involved. Again, go to our website. It doesn't take long to send an email, send a text to your lawmaker. There's a lot of lawmakers in New York, and we need to make sure they know that the people of New York want medical aid in dying. New Jersey has it. It's time for New York to step up and also to reach out to the governor and make sure the governor knows that she needs to sign this when it gets to her desk.
So it's related. We're talking about, it's largely, is it not, a Catholic demographic that is wielding a lot of power in the New York legislative arena, correct?
Yeah, and unfortunately, actually not so much in New York, but in other states. In New York, it is the Catholic Church, but what I was going to say is in a lot of states, we actually have gotten opposition from disability rights groups, similar to the lawsuit, you know, we saw in California. Very unfortunate because, again, these are safe and trusted laws. A person has never been coerced or abused. And we invite disability rights groups to help us write the language. You know, I actually took part in Illinois. We spent months working with the disability rights group there, asking them, what language do you want to see? What would make you feel comfortable? You know, how can we write this bill so that you feel really good about it? And unfortunately, in Illinois, for example, the disability rights group, even after all of that, still decided to oppose it and are not being truthful about
why
how
is
the
that?
Law. I think there's a lot of reasons, and I do think that our health system overall doesn't treat people with disabilities the way that it should. I know it can be really difficult for people, and I think there's just a lot of fear around what will happen, even though we have decades of evidence showing that this is safe and trusted, you know? It's hard, and it's very heartbreaking, and there's a lot of people with disabilities who are extremely supportive and can't understand why these groups are opposed. But I think the Catholic Church has kind of figured out that they can help fund some of the disability rights groups, and that can help with some lawmakers who don't really understand that, you know, actually this is safe and trusted. We have all of this evidence. It's okay. You know, this isn't something. In fact, in Colorado, we are almost done passing an improvement bill there. It's on its way to the governor's desk, and we anticipate he'll sign the bill there. But in the hearing, it was really moving. There were two different disability rights activists who said, we were wrong to have opposed this years ago, that all of the things they were afraid of, it didn't come true. And actually, they went neutral on the improvement bill because they realized what the improvement bill in Colorado does is it allows advanced practice registered nurses with prescriptive authority, nurse practitioners is what we usually call them, to be able to practice medical aid in dying. And it also shortens their waiting period from 15 to 7 days. It's still a pretty long waiting period, but it's better than 15 days.
Yes.
We tried to get it shorter, but, you know, people are afraid and change is hard. Change is really hard, even when we have the evidence. But we're, you know, it is going to get better in Colorado. And it was really powerful to hear these disability rights groups stand up and say, you know, we were wrong about this. This is actually okay. And we want people with disabilities to have the same rights as everybody else when they reach the end of their life.
So Samantha, yeah. Looking at this kind of the whole board, the game board here of legislative dynamics. So I'm not sure if I could have found even a better metaphor. It's stuck. That there's the escalator of different demographics that are on board, more and more allies, more people coalescing to codify more measures for more choices. That's the up escalator. Mm-hmm. But and so when you were talking about, well, in the back door, there's a sort of a little joint effort with some Catholic representatives and disability groups, so that there are the, and they're well resourced, a lot of those Catholic groups. We know that from a lot of judiciary kinds of activities, but that's the down escalator of deep pockets that are trying to, if something's adopted by a legislature, that the deep pockets will go and with a legal challenge. And I was going to make that a larger share, but it turned out to be we talked more about legislative activity. But so I want for you to look down at that whole board of forward progress, as opposed to backward progress, forward movement and backsliding. If you think that the public awareness, the enriched encounters with these conversations that are opening up, if those are going to provide for more tailwinds, I guess that's what I should use in the beginning.
Yeah.
Are there more tailwinds? It's unstoppable. And the headwinds of legal challenges from deep pockets are going to keep trying to take all these out. So what would you assess is the sort of the prevailing trend in the long term?
I think we're going to see a couple of states authorized very soon. And we know this is what people want. If we had the money to do a ballot initiative in every state, we'd have medical aid in dying in every state. I think that as more people become comfortable talking about death, understanding how important it is to have this option, and that you need to get involved. You know, I know it's a lot of people are feeling burnout lately, but there is hope, and it's really important to speak your voice. You have a voice, and your lawmakers need to hear from you. You are their boss. You know, you helped to get them elected, or at least the majority of the constituents in your district. But they really need to hear from folks. And sometimes there's lawmakers who are supportive, but they're afraid that their constituents won't support it because it is such a hard issue. So making sure that they know, I think there's really a lot of momentum towards empowering people towards the end of life. I've been seeing more and more death doulas come on board. It's just like a birth doula, but for death. And so I am very hopeful. You know, people are more powerful than money. And as long as we keep having these conversations and making our voices heard, we can make real change and make sure that not just us, but that everyone has the full range of options at the end of life and can have a peaceful end of life experience.
Well, I want for people to remember that Compassion and Choices is an excellent domain to spend time on. CompassionChoices.org, and you can sign up for events. You can sign up for webinars that you can remotely participate in. And Samantha's talked about some places you just need to go in person. You can find out about legislative changes, all those moving parts. You already mentioned that at the very beginning. I'm so glad that you did. And I want to reinforce that because I frankly have learned, it's not that I've learned and I know what to ask Samantha based on some of those things. I've also had lots of other conversations. And so I want to make sure people make good use of that. And that I do think there is a personal, I mean, we talk about priority setting. I think that giving some attention, it's going to be a very nurturing, a very affirming kind of exercise for people to look straight at what this agency is all about.
Yeah. Yeah, and thank you, Claudia. Thank you so much for having me today. It's so nice to be here talking with you about this on National Healthcare Decisions Day. And I encourage everybody, CompassionandChoices.org. There's a lot of resources out there. Don't be afraid to have the conversation. Get prepared. Talk to your doctor. You know, make sure that your values align with your doctor's values and that you and your loved ones are prepared for your last chapter.
Well, thank you so much for all the time. The time that she spent with us is time she couldn't do whipping up votes and tracking legislation. So I thank you so much, Samantha, for being on Ask a Leader today.
Thanks, Claudia.
My guest was Samantha Tradd, National Director of Advocacy for Compassionate Choices, talking about the campaigns on the state and national level and codifying measures supporting medical aid in dying and end-of-life options. Next week, it's going to be another treat. The full hour, pretty much, is going to be graphic artist Suhaila Siadat, with an extraordinary solo exhibition at the Orange County Center for Contemporary Art in Santa Ana, and that is running only until April 27th. So you'll want to hear her talk about her really moving artwork there. I got to see it at the first Saturday of the month at the Santa Ana Open Gallery. So I'm going to spend some more time in that gallery before I talk with her next Tuesday live. So talk with you next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening.